Good tickets still available if you want to go see the 49ers and the Rams tonight, because nobody cares anymore. No, it's a joke. It's a disgrace. It really is. For years and years and years, all we heard about was how bad the stick was. And no one wanted to go to the stick, but yet it was full most of the Sundays. Now they move into a beautiful state-of-the-art stadium. You got some fans on the east side of the stadium complaining that it's too hot when they go to the games. Then you got a whole bunch of other fans that think, well, the team stinks, I'm not going. You can buy, like, great tickets for the game tonight. Like, I mean, like, excellent tickets for, like, $40-$45. I'm not talking about in the upper corner. I'm talking about, like, near the field.
Really?
Absolutely. It's incredible to me. It's like, are the 49er fans really, are we going to lump you into, you know, like, you're only going to support the team when they're doing well? What is wrong with the 49er fans? These are not the 49er fans that I remember when I moved here in the late 80s and watched them through.
In the late 80s, they were good.
Oh, but let me finish, okay? They had some tough years after the mid-90s, and they faltered, and you know what? You know, the Niner fans were still there, and they're, you know, now it's like the 49er fans, I don't even know who they are anymore.
Well, they're really not in San Francisco. They're out quite a ways, right?
Yes, they are. They're in Santa Clara, which is basically San Jose.
Okay, so does that
what difference
speak
does
any?
That make?
Well, some people don't want to travel. Raiders fans, maybe, Grant.
Well, first of all, what you need to understand is the majority of the fans aren't on the peninsula. They don't live on the peninsula. They come from Sacramento. They come from, you know, south of San Jose. They come from the East Bay. All right, the fact that they are there, that has no bearing on the fact that the fans are coming, because the majority of the 49er fans aren't from the peninsula anyway.
Well, that puts them in the realm that you just said of maybe you're a fair weather fan, because now you got
it's a joke.
What they call it, the bell bottom. They got this brand new stadium. It's nice.
It's a joke.
Come on, Napier.
It's a joke. Well, a lot of fans complain about the stadium. They don't think it is nice. They think it's a piece of concrete that doesn't have any doesn't have any character to it. It's extremely hot early in the season for the fans on the east side of the stadium because of the elevation of the stadium. I mean, I can go on and on and on. But
no,
I mean,
don't do the Verlade on us, and you don't want to go because your scarf, Verlade. It's a little hot outside.
I'm
you
not
don't
even going
go.
There. You know, not going to go there. Something else I want to talk about today, and I got to tell you, I can't disagree with him.
Uh-oh.
And that's Charles Barkley. You heard what he said?
Yeah, about the babies.
So I want, but you played in this league for a long time, so I want to get your take, but I want to read his comments,
yes,
okay?
Yes, please.
This was his comments yesterday. He was actually speaking at SMU, all right, Southern Methodist University. Quote, "You know these poor babies can't play back-to-back games. They're making $20, $30, $40 million a year, but we want to make it convenient for them. We can't stress them out. So we're just going to make it more comfortable for them. The private jets and four-star hotels is not enough." All right? And then he talked about the league in general. Quote, "I am so angry. Angry at the NBA for not telling these players, wait a minute, we're paying you guys $30, $40 million, and you can't play basketball 2 days in a row? I think it's a travesty that the NBA didn't just tell these guys to play basketball 2 days in a row, moving the season up. It's just a joke to me." All right. Barkley then went out and said when he was playing, players flew commercial. They were able to play back to back. Quote, "I've sat with older guys who took trains and played 3 days in a row. I think it's a joke and a travesty that these guys won't play back to back games with all the private jets and stuff they get. The NBA caved in instead of making them play back to back games. I think it's a joke." Now, first of all, I don't hear the players complaining about the schedule. I hear about the coaches complaining about the schedule as it relates to the effectiveness of their players. Okay? I don't ever recall. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. All right? I don't recall the players going up to the coach and saying, "I don't want to play tonight."
No.
Okay?
Maybe every once in a while, but not too often.
He did say that the notion that today's players want to rest is crazy to me, and said players are being disrespectful to the fans when they decide to sit out a game, especially when the game is only time a team will visit a particular city. Again, I don't think the players make those decisions about not playing when they're on the road in a certain city.
No, I do not. I think that that really started with Pop, and he said, you know, I've taken credit, and a lot of players have spoke up to the fact that maybe he's extended careers by the way that he's going about that. But I want to say, Grant, I think that a lot of this changed when contracts were obviously guaranteed and a lot of different things. In the older days, you had to play, because if you didn't play, it would financially hurt your pocketbook. And ultimately, that's where the league may need to go back to penalize. If you're not going to play, maybe you're not going to get paid. Obviously, that's going to be in a collective bargaining agreement. But the point is, it wasn't, you know, back-to-backs when I was playing, back-to-backs 4 and 5 nights. Was it tough? Yeah, it was tough, but I think that
nobody
that's part of the
it.
League.
It is part of the league. And he said, and it's sad, to be honest with you, it's just sad because you're just disrespecting the fans. You know, they're only going to get to see you one time a year in some of these situations, and you would think a guy was like, you know what? They're only going to see me one time a year. I'm going to play in that city. And he's 100% correct about that. He is 100% correct about that particular statement.
Absolutely.
He said the notion that the commissioner has to come in and talk about it, but also extend the season is just ridiculous, flat out ridiculous. You know, I don't think it's ridiculous for this reason. The commissioner's trying to come up with a solution that works for everybody. I don't see anything ridiculous about that.
No, he is trying to find something to make sure that the product stays on the floor. I will say this, Grant, you remember this. Now, every single game is televised. When we were playing, it was a national TV game. And if it was a national TV game, there wasn't a chance in hell that anybody was sitting out, because that was the time that you were going to get to show the world Sacramento Kings.
That's correct. We live in a different era, as you just pointed out. That's number one. Number two, you know, first of all, the fans don't care about the season being spread out. They do care in Sacramento when they're paying a premium for the Warriors, the Cavaliers, and some other teams, and the Stars don't play. Then they care about that. That's wrong. In my opinion, the commissioner should have a right to fine teams sizable amounts of money when they're in a city only once and the star players don't play. All right. But my experience, and again, has it happened? Yes. Infrequently, though, does a player go up to a coach and go, you know what, I don't want to play tonight?
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often. I've maybe seen it a couple times in my career, but most times guys want to play. The one thing that I would agree with him, and you've said this many, many times, is especially if it's an Eastern Conference team coming west, that's the time when your stars definitely need to play, because those are games when LeBron James comes to town. Those are games that fathers and sons and moms
Absolutely.
And daughters put
Absolutely.
On. Yeah, they put it on their calendar.
It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. So, you know, to me, I don't think it is – I don't blame the commissioner for trying to extend the season. He's trying to come up with a solution that appeases everybody. You know, I can tell you that, you know, this is going to be my 30th year of doing the Kings games. And without a doubt, the road portion of the Kings schedule this year is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is a bit weird.
3 and 4 days off between games in some instances.
That's what I was going to say is I haven't, you know, we would experience that maybe once a year where we go on a longer trip and we might spend 2 days in a city. And, you know, guys were like, okay, we'd rather stay in Miami than Milwaukee. Get it. But looking at the schedule, that happens quite often now. And I think that that just shows that in every single arena, Grant, there's so many shows every single night. Like, you know, the Golden One Center is constantly something in there every single night. And the NBA has to figure out a way that they can do the schedule still that makes sense, because some of those games don't make a lot of sense.
No, the road schedule this year, because they don't want to play 4 and 5, and because they do not want to – you know, whatever. They don't want to have
stress
as many back-to-backs.
Players.
Like, I'll give you an example, all right?
Okay.
The Kings have a road trip that starts in Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
They play in Chicago on a Friday. They play in Milwaukee on Saturday.
Okay.
They don't play again until Wednesday in Cleveland.
Say that again.
Friday, Chicago.
Okay.
Saturday, Milwaukee.
Okay.
Wednesday, Cleveland.
Wednesday.
Saturday, Milwaukee. Wednesday, Cleveland on the road.
Goodness gracious.
So the Kings are just going to go home for a couple of days.
I would. I mean, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So they'll come home and they'll stay. They'll be here Sunday. They'll practice, probably have a day off because it's a back-to-back.
Right.
Have a practice Monday in Sacramento.
Yep.
Practice Tuesday. Get on the plane and make the 3.5-hour flight to the Mistake on the Lake. It's not unnecessary. It's very necessary. And then after they play Cleveland on December 6th.
Okay.
Then 2 nights later, they end the road trip in New Orleans. So now think about this for a minute, all right? We're talking about, if you can believe this, all right? We're talking about a 4-game road trip. Are you ready for this?
Yep.
A 4-game road trip that begins on December 1st.
Yes.
The Kings will not get home until December 9th. 4 games.
Wow.
How stupid is that?
And it starts with a back-to-back. So you get the first two out right away.
Yes. So you're on the road. You play your second game on a Saturday, and then you only have 2 more games the rest of the week.
Well, you know what, Grant? They're going to complain when you play too much. They're going to complain when you rest too much. And that's what, I guess, to your point about the commissioner. He's trying to find a way to figure it out.
It's just, again, I've never quite seen anything like it.
No, I haven't. As I started putting this in my calendar, I was like, is that right? I had to look at it.
Well, here's another one. The Kings have a road trip that starts, they'll travel on Friday, January 12th. All right?
Okay.
They play in L.A. against the Clippers on the 13th, play in Oklahoma City the 15th, all right? So then they come home for 1 game, then listen to this road trip. They leave Thursday for Memphis. Hopefully they have a mechanical so they don't get there until they absolutely have to get there on the 18th, all right? So they start in Memphis on the 19th.
Okay.
Then that's a Friday. They don't play again until Monday in Charlotte. Okay. Then a back-to-back Tuesday in Orlando, Thursday Miami, and then Sunday in San Antonio, Tuesday in New Orleans.
Ooh, that's a 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12-dayer.
How about that?
Yeah.
12 days to play 6 games. Whereas in the past, you would play 4 games in 5 nights, maybe have 2 days off,
yep,
play 2 games in 3 days and get home.
And you're back home.
Right?
Yeah.
What a difference, huh?
It is a big difference. But, scheduling-wise, I'm sure it is absolute hell to try to schedule
that. So here's the point I'm trying to make. There are a lot of things that Charles Barkley said that I totally agree with. I think the players are very spoiled. That's number one. Number two, I think it's a travesty, and I've been very consistent about this. And I said that rest had become the worst four-letter word in basketball. And there's nothing about my comments that I would like to take back. I firmly believe that. Number three, okay, it is absolutely inexcusable for a coach to sit down a player such as Tyronn Lue did last year with LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love when they were on national TV playing the Clippers on a Saturday night. He didn't play anybody. Okay, inexcusable, wrong. There should be a $1 million fine to the Cavaliers for that. Okay, he did the same thing earlier in the season with a single game at Memphis. The only time they go to Memphis all year, he didn't bring the big three.
Terrible.
Again, fine him $1 million. Keep on fining them. It's wrong. And there are many other examples. You know, there needs to be an awareness of why you are getting paid. There has to be an awareness of why the league exists. There needs to be an awareness of what your responsibility is in terms of the fans. And if you're going to a place once and you rest your players, there is no excuse for that. I don't care if you've played 9 games in 10 days. It's inexcusable.
I don't disagree with that at all, Grant. And when you rest multiple players, that's when it takes it to a whole nother level. Because if you, for instance, you're looking at Cleveland and they have a big three of Kyrie, LeBron, and Kevin Love, and they come out west, and you go to a game and all three of them are resting. If you want to rest the players, rest them at home a couple days before the road trip. Get it in. When you go out on the road, you have to serve your patrons. You have to take care of the fan. If you do not take care of the fan, ultimately, the fan is not going to be there, Grant, and that's where the money is made at, is people putting people in the seats. I understand it is TV and a lot of things, and maybe the NBA has gotten a little soft on that standpoint because so much revenue now is coming in from the TV side that the turnstiles might not mean quite as much.
All right, coming up on the show today, we got a full 4 hours. We talk a lot of football, but coming up at 3:30, Josh Alper writes for Pro Football Talk. Coach Dave Yeager going to be coming on at 4 o'clock. We will have the Dave Yeager Show each and every week during the season. Frank Isola from the New York Daily News at 4:30 will get the latest on what's going on with the Knicks and Carmelo. It already seems like the Knicks are a disaster waiting to happen again.
It looks that way, because I would ask you one question, Grant. What is the direction of the Knicks? And you wouldn't be able to tell me. What's your game plan? What are you trying to do? What's the culture? And I don't think that there's a definite direction. And especially in, you know, we're talking about Madison Square Garden. We're talking the New York Knicks. And for them to be in such disarray, and it's been like that for a while, it's really unfair to the Knicks fans, because they have some awesome fans. I will give them that.
All right. Something else that's, I think, interesting. And this is going to be coming more and more topical with more and more research on deceased NFL players.
Mm-hmm.
All right? We know about Junior Seau and his autopsy and what they found with CTE in his brain. All right? It was revealed today that tests conducted on the brain of former New England Patriot Aaron Hernandez, who took his own life serving a sentence for murder.
Yes.
Showed severe signs of CTE, all right? And his attorney said today that the player's daughter is suing the NFL and the Patriots for leading Hernandez to believe the sport was safe. Well, first of all, I'm not an attorney, and that, to me, is the equivalent of saying I'm going to sue the manufacturer of my racing car because my family member lost their life on turn 3 at the Indy 500 going 500 miles an hour. Or, to me, that's the same as a boxer who, when he turns 55, has dementia and, you know, I'm sorry, you know, that's like smoking and then getting lung cancer and trying to sue the tobacco company. I'm sorry. But that's my opinion on that. What I am saying is there are many, 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 many players that are alive today that probably have CTE, okay,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know it yet, who aren't going out killing people and committing heinous crimes, all right? So I also want to put that out there. I am not qualified to right. say whether the severe signs of this brain disease caused him to take the life of another human being. I can't say that. Should you be concerned about it? Yes. Everyone that plays contact sports who has had repeated trauma to the head should be concerned about it.
Oh, definitely. And you know what? Looking at Aaron Hernandez, a very young player.
27 when he killed himself.
Right. So maybe what the legalities that they're trying to put out there or lawsuit or whatever, they're trying to maybe say, is that what I'm taking from it, that the CTE was a cause of his actions?
Correct. Well, okay. There's always a possibility.
Yeah.
It's why people feel that Junior Seau took his life.
Yeah, and the guy in Pittsburgh, I can't think of the lineman in Pittsburgh that took his life. They did the story about
Mike Webster?
Yes, sir.
Yes,
Mike
the
Webster.
Center. So anyway, here's the deal, all right? Dr. Ann McKee, who is the director of the CTE Center at Boston University, concluded that Hernandez had staged 3 of 4
wow.
of the disease, and also had early brain atrophy and large perforations in a central membrane. Now, I don't know what that means. In other words, I can read that, but I don't really know what that means. I can't
equate it to what that would make a person do.
Correct. So, but what I can tell you in layman terms is that's very disconcerting for someone that young.
Oh, no doubt about it. I would think if he's 27, this is where it gets a little tricky, Grant, because I'm sure that his daughter is probably young.
Yeah.
So this is probably more the, you know, saying this is something that you can do for your father.
Here's what we're dealing with. As of right now, September of 2017, CTE can only be diagnosed in an autopsy. So we can't do tests on living current or former football players for CTE. It can only be diagnosed in an autopsy, all right? Now, we went by and said this. A recent study found evidence of the disease in 110 of 111 NFL players whose brains were examined. Many of those players had no issues with, you know, violent actions, blah, blah, blah. But according to this report, and we've heard this before, CTE can be caused, all right, by repeated head trauma, and this is the important part, leads to symptoms such as violent mood swings, depression, and other cognitive difficulties.
Okay. Right? So this is my thing is, you can't tell me when I look at Phil Sims, when I look at Boomer Esiason,
nope,
that those guys don't. They probably have it as well, Grant.
I would think they do.
Yeah, but it obviously affects different people in different ways. And
it's been linked with repeated concussions.
Okay.
It involves brain damage, particularly in the frontal region that controls many of the functions, including emotion,
okay,
impulse control, judgment, memory, social behavior.
Wow.
So you could have been, you know, you could be, maybe you were someone that got in fights a lot, and maybe you got hit in the head over a chair, or you got hit, you know, I mean, you don't even have to be a football player. If you've had repeated trauma to your head.
Boxing.
Boxing for sure.
Yeah. My question, I don't even know if you know this or if they know. If you have it in the frontal lobe, obviously that means in the front. Is that because you're repeatedly getting hit in the front?
I have no idea
okay.
about that.
That's when I hear that, could you get hit in the back and still have frontal problems? So, man, that is.
I don't know. I know that CTE involves brain damage, again, particularly in the frontal region. Now, I don't know if you can have a blow to the head in the back and it affects your frontal part of your brain because your brain actually is moving forward in the skull.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. What I do know is I had when you left early yesterday, and I had someone call me up, and they said, Grant, do you think 50 years from now football will exist? And I said, you know, that is a great question.
That is, actually.
And I said, I believe that with more data, more research on deceased players that give their bodies up to science, I believe that this trend will become one of the norm rather than the exception. Now, I'm not talking about players, current or former, going out and committing violent crimes.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But there are other forms of brain damage that have nothing to do with violence, one being dementia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I can go right on down the list. And so it was 2 days ago that a leading researcher said that based on all of the studies that he's done, he would advise that tackle football not be played on the youth level until you're at least 12 years old.
Wow.
All right.
I would say in 50 years, football as we know it, because a lot of people think it's changed already, it won't be the same as we know it.
That's exactly the way I answer that question.
Okay.
You and I are on the same page without even talking about it.
Yeah.
You're right. The game will be, I think, 50 years from now, vastly different than it is today.
Yes, sir. I agree.
And so for those, and I'm guilty of this sometimes too, when I see penalties called, and I'm like, what on earth? The reality is the safety of the player should always come first.
Yes, and unfortunately, when we first started this, it was for the love and the game, and we didn't take any of this into consideration.
We'll be right back. We'll talk NFL football on the field. We've got the Niners and the Rams tonight. Coming up next, Josh Alper, writer for Pro Football Talk here on Sports 1140. Grant Napier, Doug Christie. We are getting you right up till 7 o'clock. We got a lot of football, obviously, with Thursday night football as the 49ers host the Rams. That game coming up at 5:30. And then we look ahead to next week. After the NFL weekend, we've got Media Day out at the Kings practice facility on Monday. Doug and I will be broadcasting live out there beginning at 3, and then practice and training camp begin on Tuesday. And the reason why I bring that up is Coach Dave Yeager is going to be joining us at 4 o'clock today, as he'll be on with us each and every week during the NBA season.
Can't wait, Napes. It is getting closer. Watching Coach Yeager down there walk around, just getting a chance to talk to him, chat with him. He's excited. Vlade, Peja, and then the team. You can just see it. And talking to Willie yesterday, absolutely awesome conversation.
I think Yeager's had to get a whole new wardrobe.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
I told
him. He looks great.
I said, who's a teenager coaching the team?
I know, right?
He looks good, man. He looks real good.
Yeah, I'm with you. Incredible. All right, let's get to Tony. Hello, Tony.
Hi, how are you guys?
What's happening?
A couple things. Your CTE you were talking about, one thing I was thinking about with that, too, is about all the people in the military. I was in the Army. I was a paratrooper. And I know parachute accidents, you know, things like that happen. You know, you think of how many people have the, you know, CTE. That
no question. No question about it. 100% correct.
And then one other thing I want to speak about, too, is you guys have talked about the schedule and Charles Barkley. I agree. I do think so many of the players, football, everything, they don't honor their contracts. They end up wanting to renegotiate before they're over, especially on football. And, Doug, one thing I was thinking is, since you were a player, how would you feel if they ever had, like, a base salary and if you got paid, like, for your assists, for your points, minutes played, stuff like that, where it was a little more incentive to play?
You know, it's possible that we end up there at some point if something like this continues to happen. I doubt with collective bargaining and what have you, but that's what Charles was kind of alluding to, the fact that when contracts weren't all the way guaranteed and different things like that, players saw the incentive to make sure that they're out there grinding every single day, and they were doing that, and now it's not as much, Tony.
Yeah, I agree. It just seems like, you know, when you're making millions, you know, like Le'Veon Bell, it's like you honored your contract when they paid you. You know, why can't you finish it up? You know, it just seems like the players are more and more greedy. It's like they just seem like they're not happy, and a normal fan can't go. It's just so much for corporate now because the tickets are just like crazy, I believe.
Nah, you know, I disagree with you on that. I'm sorry. You and I are on different aisles when it comes to that. I don't think tickets are – and, again, I'm speaking in general terms – I think there are extremely affordable tickets to most, we live in Sacramento, so let's keep it to Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Sacramento Kings games, all right, individual tickets can be very affordable. Yeah, you maybe not sit in three rows from the court.
Right.
But, you know, if you look at the Golden One Center and a lot of our new venues in the NBA,
not
really all the seats are good.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, and I always tell this story. I was blessed growing up. My dad used to take me and my brother to NFL games. We used to go to hockey games. We used to go to Yankee games. And you know what? I don't ever recall thinking about where I was sitting, nor did I ever ask my dad how come we're not closer to the court or closer to the field. And so there are all kinds of ticket plans that are available, individual tickets that are extremely affordable, not that much more than going to a movie and buying refreshments. So I disagree with you on that, Tony.
You know, Tony, real quickly.
No, go ahead, Tony. Let me hear your response to that.
No, I agree on some of the – some places are cheaper than others, obviously. Like you said, the game tonight, like you said, $40, that's reasonable. And Sacramento Kings, I know they have a lot of good seats. There are other arenas where they cost more or different things, but how about as far as like a playoff game? I don't think I'd ever could, you know, go see a Super Bowl game. I think
that's a different animal. That's a different animal altogether.
Okay.
You can't go. Listen, I always tell this story. In 1987, I had two tickets to the Super Bowl. They were, the face value was $75. Four years ago, I took my sons to a Super Bowl to see the Giants and the Patriots. Okay, and again, it was not easy. The face value was $950.
Whoa.
Okay, so just think about that, Tony. You're right. The vast majority of people, vast majority, cannot afford to go to a Super Bowl. You're absolutely correct.
Thank you very much, guys, and it's good listening to you.
Thank you, Tony. Good for the call. You know, but go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to hear what Tony had to say. Go ahead.
No. To his last point, Grant, you know, even when I was coming out of college, that's the year that Webb and those guys were at the Final Four, and they gave us some tickets, and we ended up selling them, and we sold them for a couple thousand, but
right,
the face value on it, and that was back in 92.
Uh-huh.
So those big events like that, it is extremely difficult to take a family to something like that.
January 24th. 1987, I was at the Rose Bowl 20 hours before the game started, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So the game started Sunday at 3:30. I was there Saturday night at 6.
So you're having fun?
Yeah, we had fun.
Okay.
We had more than fun.
Okay.
We had a great time. I told you that story, right? We landed in L.A. My buddy, I had to go take the super shuttle to Van Nuys, and my buddy picks me up. I went to college with. His name Mike White. His dad played with the Giants, and he had tickets to the Super Bowl, and I had won tickets through the lottery. I had never been to California, Southern California, before.
First time.
Took off in St. Louis. It was 5 below 0. I landed in L.A. It was 76. So we get to his place, and he goes, what do you want to do? And I go, what do you mean what I want to do? I go, whatever you want. He goes, well, we're going to the game. We're leaving in about an hour. I said, we're leaving for what game in an hour? He goes, what do you mean what game? We're going to the Rose Bowl. And I'm like, okay, I'm in. That sounds great.
And, what day is it?
Huh?
It's Saturday?
It's Saturday.
Okay.
Saturday afternoon.
So that's why you're asking what game, because the game's on Sunday.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I got
gotcha.
Yeah,
right. Well, his brother had rented an RV. Uh-oh. We drove to Pasadena from
okay.
Van Nuys.
All right.
And
not too far.
It was loaded up, and we ended up parking at the RV area at the Rose Bowl, and we literally ended up being parked right next to John Elway's sister. And so it was Giants fans and Broncos fans everywhere, and it was truly one of the most amazing nights I've ever spent. It was so much fun. Nobody was bickering, fighting. We all, you know, it was great. And I sold my ticket that night. I had two $75 tickets.
Okay.
I was making, honestly, at the time, I was making $13,000. All right? So I sold my one ticket for $750.
Cool.
Yeah. Paid for everything. Paid for my two trips to New York prior to that to go to the divisional game against San Francisco and the championship game against Washington. And then ended up.
Did you go to the game?
Of course I went to the game.
And you still went to the game.
Are you kidding me? Why would I not go to the game?
Well, you said you sold your ticket.
I had two of them.
Oh, okay.
I sold one for $750. The other one, I went to the game.
I thought you said you had one ticket from the lottery.
No. I had two tickets.
Oh, okay.
My brother didn't want to pay to go from New York. My dad didn't want to go. And so they said, you can have both tickets and try to sell one. I said, that sounds great. And I sold it for $750.
Can't
face
make
value, $75.
Wow.
And, you know, I got to the Rose Bowl, and I ended up, my ticket was, like, honestly, 25, 30 rows off the field on the 30-yard line behind the Giants bench.
Yeah.
January 25th, 1987. I remember like it was
yesterday.
Can't
make it up. Grant Napier and his Forrest Gump life.
Hey, I got, you know what? I'm like, wow.
The things and stories that you have in that redhead.
You have
boy,
no
oh
idea.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do.
All right, we'll be right back. Sports 1140 KHDK. We are moving right along.
You know, Napes, we were talking about CTE.
Yes.
And you and I were discussing the fact of rugby. And I would like to see maybe if they, you know, if they had CAT scans or whatever it is, or autopsies of rugby players, because no helmet, tackling properly, those are the type of things that might help this, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, if you watch rugby, it's a very, well, it appears to look like it's a violent sport. But
right.
They tackle the way the NFL would like to see their players tackle.
Right.
They don't tackle with their head. They don't use their head
right.
as a, well, you can't use it as a weapon because you don't have anything on. But my point is, you know, that's the way the NFL would like to see their players tackle.
Well, you know what I think? Shoulder pads, helmet. All those, it gives the players a false sense of security that they can use their head to tackle.
Yep.
You mentioned your dad playing,
right.
and he played with the old school leather helmet,
yes.
no face mask. We were talking off the air that if they maybe started that type of idea with peewee football, take
right.
the face mask off, maybe the kids would stop.
You're always going to have head injuries in football. The game is played at too fast of a speed, and the reality is there's not a human on earth that can, you know, change their position of their head in a split second. So you are going to have, and listen, I'm sure when my dad played in 1950, I'm sure there were concussions
no
back
doubt.
Then. You know, but my point is not anything like we have today. And so, you know, you're going to have concussions playing a sport like baseball. I mean, I will tell you, and you and I have talked about this with our umpire friend Brian, mm-hmm. and we've talked, and I talked to, I was at an event a couple of weeks ago in Dallas. And former major league catcher Jim Sundberg was at my table. And Jim was a major league catcher for many, many years and a tremendous catcher. And I asked him about this. And I said, how many concussions do you think you had catching from foul balls? And he said, well, you know, I don't know, but I have had scans and of that nature to check out my brain. And based on what we know, knock on wood, I don't have any brain damage. But again, CTE can only be diagnosed from autopsies. I guess my point is, you know, when you play sport, and I mentioned, you weren't here yesterday when I talked about this, it would not surprise me, and I don't know, but I'm only asking this, if there are not brain damage-related injuries from the heading of a soccer ball.
Oh, no doubt.
Okay, but so, but you just said no doubt without even thinking about it.
Not even
a thought. I thought about it before I said it, and I'm like, why would we think that taking a soccer ball at a very high velocity and using your head, even though the ball is not a hard rock, would not create something? And then the other issue, when you watch soccer, how many times do you see two players going to head the ball and they miss it and they head each other?
It happens.
So my point is, you know, it's not just football.
No, not at all.
It's baseball. It's soccer. I mean, you and I watch the Stanley Cup playoffs every night.
Head into the boards.
Right, you know, I mean, so, I mean, there is a risk involved when you are participating in recreational activities. You can be a skier and go up to Heavenly or go up to Squaw and, you know, you have a bad fall and you land on your head, you get a concussion. I mean, you know, it's my point is, hey, it's life.
And you know what? You mentioned something earlier in our conversation before we went on break. You're talking about Aaron Hernandez, and at 27, he had stage 3 of 4 in CTE. That is alarming in and of itself because he is more of a present-day player, Grant, meaning that you also mentioned the speed of the game has increased, the violence has increased. A lot of the times the shoulder pads and thigh pads have decreased. They used to be a lot bigger. So these hits that are going on maybe are, since you know the kids are moving better and they're hitting harder at a younger age, a guy like him at 27, so everything is fast-forward a little bit where you might have seen guys getting this at 40, 50 years old. Now you're seeing it in a guy as young as Aaron Hernandez at 27.
All right. Let's get to Robert. Robert, you're on with Grant Napier and Doug Christie.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
How are you?
I'm good. So I have a question for you guys, and I wanted to just get your opinion. I have a coworker, and she has a son who is 8 years old, and he actually plays tackle football down here in Stockton. And I think that's a big thing that is more prevalent nowadays in this day and age. And I wanted to get your opinion on, what do you think? I mean, we know these guys are going through college and the NFL and they're showing up with CTE problems. What's your opinion on children at that age playing tackle football and possibly starting the CTE at even younger ages when the brains are still developing?
Well, I got to tell you this. My son played tackle football beginning at age 8. And if I could do it all over again, I wouldn't allow it. And my son is now 19.
He played
from age 8, he played 4 or 5 years, and then he decided he didn't want to play anymore. And when I reflect back, I'm very happy that he didn't. He chose to play lacrosse. But so if I could do it all over again, I wouldn't allow my son to play football at age 8.
And Doug, what do you think? What's your opinion on it?
You know what it is? Robert, we were just talking about it. Aaron Hernandez at 27, and he's more of your current day player, had stage 3 of 4. So that's saying that he probably was getting a lot of hits earlier, because now there's training for kids, like individual trainers that only professionals got, at a really, really young age. And that's teaching them to move better, move more efficient. They're moving faster. They're more violent. They're hitting harder. So yeah. Grant and I were talking about rugby. Maybe it's at the younger age, it's more of a rugby style of football. Maybe take the face mask off. Different things that are going to encourage the players to learn how to tackle correctly and hit correctly if they are going to play, because otherwise the ability of a helmet and shoulder pads makes you feel, I don't even know if you heard Jerry Jones, he's getting honored by Arkansas, and they gave him the helmet and he said it made him feel like Superman or something like right? So it gives you that thought in your mind that you can just hit anything with your head, and you can't. And especially
you feel invincible.
For the kids, you got to teach them the fundamentals in the right way, or they can really hurt themselves.
Yeah, I remember being in, I was 9 or 10, and I was playing flag football because tackle was unheard of at that time. And so nowadays, when I heard her say that her son plays at that age, I just was taken aback by that, thinking, wow, that is just too young to be, you know, playing tackle football. But that was just my opinion. So.
You know, Robert, let me say this as well. The same thing in basketball. When I was a kid and I would watch Magic Johnson on the weekend, and then I would, as soon as I was done, I'd go out and I'm Magic Johnson. Well, you got to think that when these kids are watching Ray Lewis, when they're watching Antonio Brown, and they're seeing them do these crazy things, they go out and try it. Similar when you watch WWE wrestling, all these different things. And the kids don't know any better, so they try it. They hit as hard. They use. So that's why you really got to practice the fundamentals.
Sure, sure. So I hope there's not going to be some sort of epidemic in sports, you know, 10, 20 years from now, where there's a lot of children or adults at that time that are going to be, you know, traumatized or damaged, you know, mentally from all this happening now at such a young age.
Yeah, that's a great question. But you also have to understand there are many, 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 many former athletes that are living very healthy, normal lives into their 80s that played various sports and had, you know, so, you know, we got to keep that in mind. Hey, Dave Yeager, the coach of the Kings, he's going to be coming on with us next as we begin the Dave Yeager Show each and every week. The coach of the Kings will be with us. And that's next, coming up right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.